too greet you in the name of Jesus this morning. One thing I would like to share, this happened several weeks ago. I thought of sharing it. I had started to raise my hand that particular Sunday and you were done, and so I put my hand back down. But this happened in the house that used to be my parents' house. The furnace quit working, and so I was messing around with it. Yeah, pretty much, because mechanical things I can kind of figure out, but when it comes to electronics, I'm kind of lost. And there was juice coming into the furnace, but it did not work. And so had a little circuit board in it, and that's where I get lost. When there's resistors and such things like that, I get lost with that. And so I couldn't figure it out. And later I was talking to my son, and he had some experience with gas furnaces and so forth. And he said, well, see if there's a reset or something on that circuit board. And I said, I looked already and I couldn't find anything. So I went back one more time and I found a little bitty fuse, just a two-blade fuse that was blown. And so I replaced that fuse and it worked. That's the end of the story for you guys. But I often, when things happen like that, try to figure things out. I often pray and say, God, what kind of lesson can you show me through this? And the Lord spoke to me and said, just look one more time. Pray one more prayer. Give someone one more word of encouragement. And sometimes that's all it takes, is just one more time. Let's continue to do so. We've heard much this morning already about encouraging and helping and so forth. Let's do what we can to make this life an easier road for somebody else. So don't give up. Even though you don't know anything about resistors and such, there might be something there that you can see. And that little fuse was in behind some other things, and it was a different color than what I expected, but I did see it. The message this morning is, as the men were sharing here, I thought, well, my message is probably not a message that you would want to share down in North Carolina at this time. I've entitled it God's Provision and Protection. And those people would probably say, where was God when we needed Him? And I can't answer that. Can't answer that. I'm going to start in Deuteronomy. I'm going to be doing quite a bit of reading this morning, and we have a full slate of things going on today, so I'll try not to keep you very long. I will tell Jay, where's Jay? Okay. I would like to sing then, God's Way is Best for Me, in the Christian hymnal number 389, after the message. And I'm going to, when I'm reading long passages, I'm going to be reading out of the New King James Version, just for make it a little bit more readable. I'm going to start in Deuteronomy chapter 29, and we're going to read all of 29 and a few verses in chapter 30. And this is somewhat familiar. The key verse is going to be in verse 5, and I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes have not worn out, and your sandals have not worn out on your feet. We would say, how could that be possible? For 40 years, wearing the same clothes, we would shrink at that. The same shoes did not wear out. God's provision. God knew what they were going through, and God provided for them during that time. So let's read chapter 29 of Deuteronomy, starting in verse 1. These are the words of the covenant which the Lord commanded Moses to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab. They're on the east side now, just getting ready to cross the Jordan River and go in and claim the land. Now Moses called all Israel and said to them, "You have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land. The great trials which your eyes have seen, the signs and those great wonders. Yet the Lord has not given you a heart to perceive and eyes to see and ears to hear to this very day." And I can't understand that. Why did God not allow them to understand the things that they were going to? But he didn't. And we just have to take that as we read it here. God did not allow them to understand all the things that they were going through. "And I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes have not worn out on you, and your sandals have not worn out on your feet. You have not eaten bread, nor have you drunk wine or similar drink, that you may know that I am the Lord your God." Remember, all they had for those 40 years approximately was the manna that fell from heaven. That's it. Every day, every morning, manna. We'd get tired of that. And some of them did grumble and complain about that. And they didn't have anything special to drink other than water. We don't understand that. "And when you came to this place, Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, came out against us to battle, and we conquered them. We took their land and gave it as an inheritance to the Reubenites, to the Gadites, and to half the tribe of Manasseh. Therefore, keep the words of this covenant and do them, that ye may prosper in all that you do. All of you stand today before the Lord your God, your leaders and your tribes and your elders and your officers and all the men of Israel. Children, take note of this next verse. Your little ones and your wives, also the stranger who is in the camp, from the one who cuts your wood to the one who draws your water." God provided for the vulnerable that were among them. And I believe he still does. The vulnerable children, widows, widowers, those that are sick, they have a special place in God's heart. And I think that is still true today. And also, and I tried to find this reference and I could not, mentions here the one who cuts your wood and to the one who draws your water. Remember, there was a group of men that came to them, and they were dressed in shabby clothes, and they made like they were poor people to gain pity from the people, the children of Israel. And so the children of Israel spared them, and later was found out that they deceived them. And so the children of Israel said, "We made you a promise that we wouldn't take your city, but you are going to serve us as long as you live." And I think this is a reference to that. And it says in that spot that they would be, I think it says this, that they would be drawers of water and hewers of wood, although I could not find that. So if you find that, let me know, and I'll jot it down here. But God, because of the promise that was made to them, God provided for them. Verse 12, "that you may enter into covenant with the Lord your God and into his oath, which the Lord your God makes with you today, that he may establish you today as a people for himself, and that he may be God to you, just as he has spoken to you, and just as he has sworn to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I make this covenant and this oath, not with you alone, but also with him who stands here with us today before the Lord your God, as well as with him who is not here with us today. For you know," and these next two verses are in parentheses in this writing, "for you know that we dwelt in the land of Egypt, and that we came through the nations which you passed by, and you saw their abominations and their idols which were among them, wood and stone and silver and gold." Now I'm not exactly sure what all they may have made reference to here. But it says that they, as they passed through those other lands, those other cities, they saw the things. They saw that their idols, says here, wood, stone, silver, and gold. They saw those things. And I'm not sure what all you might read into this. But we do remember that Achan saw the wedge of gold and the Babylonish garment, and he took them. They saw things that they were not accustomed to. If we have a relatively rural community, but if we go into bigger cities, Chicago, Detroit, we see things that we are not accustomed to. And sometimes we see things that say, I wouldn't mind having that. I wouldn't mind doing that or going there, whatever the case might be. I have to, when I thought of this, I had to think of years ago, two of my uncles took a Western trip. They were somewhat up in years, and they and their wives took a trip out west, and they came through Las Vegas. Two men, their families, both had grown up in relatively simple homes. They came through Las Vegas. And my one uncle said, when we came through, when we went out of town, he said, I did not look back. He said, I did not look back. All the evil that he saw on the billboards and so forth, he said, I didn't even want to look back. The children of Israel passed through some of those cities as well. And some of them probably would have said the same thing that my uncle did. I don't want any part of that. But are we not also tempted sometimes? Boy, I wouldn't mind having that. I wouldn't mind going there or doing that or whatever the case might be. I sometimes look at automobiles. Boy, I wouldn't mind having one of those. 68 Nova with a big engine in it. Oh, that, I would like that. I don't know if that'll ever happen or not. Anyways, we need to just leave those things and not look back. We need to pass through and keep on going and not partake of those things. Verse 28 kind of cuts in here. So that there may not be among you man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turns away today from the Lord our God, to go and serve the gods of those nations, and that there may not be among you a root bearing bitterness or wormwood, and so it may not happen when he hears the words of this curse, that he blesses himself in his heart, saying, I still have peace, even though I walk in the imagination of my heart, as though the drunkard could not be included with the sober. You can't do that. You can't partake of those things and say, I have peace in my heart. It just doesn't happen. It's going to catch up with you sooner or later. Verse 20. The Lord would not spare him. For then the anger of the Lord and his jealousy would burn against that man. And every curse that is written in this book would settle on him. And the Lord would blot out his name from under heaven. And the Lord would separate him from all the tribes of Israel for adversity, according to all the curses of the covenant that are written in the book of the law. So that the coming generation of your children who rise up after you, and the foreigner who comes from a far land, would say, when they see the plagues of that land and the sicknesses which the Lord has laid on them, the whole land is brimstone, salt, and burning. It is not sown, nor does it bear, nor does any grass grow there, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and his wrath. All the nations would say, why has the Lord done so to this land? What does the heat of this great anger mean? And I'm not sure how far you want to carry this, but we live in a fairly prosperous area of the United States. Our crops produce fairly well. We're able to grow gardens. We're able to have houses, automobiles, and so on and so forth. What do people think when they pass through our communities or when they pass by our homes and they see, they know what we profess? What do they think? And I don't know. I don't know that answer. But is it possible that people would say, well, you know, they're blessed, they're not blessed, whatever the case might be? Verse 25, then men would say, because they have forsaken the covenant. Now, this is in relation to if how shall I say, if bad things befall upon them and it doesn't go well with them, then they would say, they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. For they went and served other gods and worshipped them, gods that they did not know and that he had not given to them. Then the anger of the Lord was aroused against this land to bring it to every curse that is written in this book. And the Lord uprooted them from their land in anger, in wrath, and in great indignation, and cast them into another land, as it is to this day. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. There's a lot of things here that could be said or alluded to. It mentions here, if I can get my eye on it, they served other gods and worshipped them, gods that they did not know and that he had not given unto them. What might those gods be in our life, in our community, in our homes? I don't know. Gods that we do not know. It is possible, and I don't know if I can explain myself, it is possible that we get involved in things that we may not understand where it might lead us to. It talks about here the gods that they did not know. I jotted down a few things that we could get involved in. Halloween. We just came through Halloween. Looks kind of innocent. But if we get involved in that kind of thing, it's not good for us. Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny. Sometimes we don't know where this might lead us until it's too late, until we're already deeply involved. They served other gods and worshipped them, gods that they did not know. Let us be careful. I'm not pointing the finger at any one thing or anybody, but let's be careful that we don't get involved. If I would have that 68 Nova, start going to car shows, where might that lead me? I don't know. If I get a 68 Nova, you might remind me of what I had to say here. I don't know. I saw a picture of a 68 Nova, and that's what came to my mind here. But we have promises, and we have a future, and we see that here in the next few verses of chapter 30. Now it shall come to pass, when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you, and you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God drives you, and you return to the Lord your God and obey his voice according to all that I command you today, you and your children with all your heart and with all your soul, that the Lord your God, there again the children are mentioned, that the Lord your God will bring you back from captivity and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you. I'm not sure if that is still future or not. I don't know that. We do know, we've heard, that there has been quite a resurgence on Jews returning to their homeland. My own personal belief, and I have no scripture to base this, but my own personal belief is that we probably will see that continue, and it may be more pronounced at a later time when the Jews will return to their land. Verse 4, if any of you are driven out of the furthest parts under heaven, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will bring you. Then the Lord your God will bring you to the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it. He will prosper you and multiply you more than your fathers. There's some of the provision that I think I came across, that God will take care of them. God will take care of his people. and we are His people today, God will take care of us. And again, I say to the people in North Carolina, they might wonder, how will God take care of me? And I don't have an answer for that. But this is a promise that the God has given to us. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your descendants to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. This is a promise that He has given to us in His Word, although it is in the Old Testament. A verse out of Isaiah that goes along with what we've been talking about. Isaiah chapter 54 and verse 17. Just one verse here. No weapon that is formed against you shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord. Now these things, of course, we understand that this is not a blanket statement. There are things that happen to God's people that we might say should not happen to God's people or to any people. There are people out there, there are evil people among us that do not like Christians. And it just makes them angry that we would profess some of the things that we do. And they would say, just like North Carolina, they say, how is there a God alive that would allow such things like that? There are angry people around us that here it says that they will not prosper. And again, I say that that is a general statement that you cannot apply to every situation. But in general, I would say that that is true. Joshua 3. Verses 13 through 17. And here we have some of God's provision. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon an heap. I thought, well, this is familiar reading. We know about the crossing of the Jordan River. But I thought it well worth just again reading it, just to see that God does take care of His people. And it came to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as they that bear the Ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the Ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks at the time of harvest, that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon an heap very far from the city Adam, that is beside Zaratan, and those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. God took care of them. God told them to cross. He gave them specific instructions. He said when the priest's feet touch the waters, it's going to part. And that's exactly what took place. And I've never been over there in that area. But to walk over on dry ground that had been underwater for years and years and years, there's no body of water that we could do that unless it dries up and is dry for a number of years. But here it says it happened immediately. The waters quit flowing and they walked over on dry ground. Provision. Then I, as I was studying, I asked myself the question, what kind of miracles has God performed in my life, in your life? What has God done for you that we would look back and say, only God could have done that? He does that for us from time to time. Be they little or big, God does that for His people. And here it says that they did this. They took these stones up, going on to chapter 4 and verse 18. They took up these stones, it says, so that in time to come, when the children, when the younger generation asks, what's this pile of stones here for, that you can tell them what took place here. And that is exactly why I'm reading this story again this morning, so that the young ones, the children, can understand what God did, not only for the children of Israel, but what God does for us. And we are blessed to be able to do that. Chapter 4, starting in verse 18. I'm going to read through the end of the chapter here. And it came to pass, when the priests that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord were come up out of the midst, this is after they passed through, out of the midst of Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up onto the dry land, that the waters of Jordan returned unto their place and flowed over all his banks, as they did before. It went back to normal. And the people came up out of Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and encamped in Gilgal in the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of Jordan did Joshua pitch in Gilgal. And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. Imagine that. It's hard for us to imagine that, but when you would tell a child that we walked over that body of water on dry ground, and a child would say, how was that possible? Then they had the opportunity to tell them what God did for them. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until we were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever. This is why we repeat the things that we do. Lost my place. Now I'm going to go to the New Testament, and here again, read quite a bit here about Paul when he was shipwrecked and God spoke to him during the night and gave him directions of what to do. This would come in under his protection. Also provision. God took care of them. In Acts chapter 27. We're going to start reading in verse 9. Now when much time had been spent, again reading out of the New King James, and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only the cargo and ship, but also our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion, I believe he was the one that was in charge of Paul, was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there. When the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called something Euprocladian. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. In other words, they quit rowing or took the sails down or whatever. And running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. When they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship, and fearing lest they should run aground on the Cirrus sands, they struck sail, and so were driven. In other words, they just committed themselves to the water. And because we were exceeding tempest-tossed the next day, they lighted the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. Now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. But after long absence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of the Lord, to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island.'" But when the 14th night, this was now 14 days that they were tossed about in the sea, and very likely there were many of them that said, "This will not end good." When the 14th day had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors sensed that we were drawing near some land. And they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff into the sea, they let down a smaller boat and they were going to escape. Under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. It's quite a lesson there, to stay in the ship, to stay where we're protected. How often do we cut our ropes and go? And it may not be good for us. And as the day was about to dawn, Paul implored all of them to take food, saying, "Today is the 14th day that you have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you." And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged and also took food themselves. And in all, we were 276 persons on the ship. So when they had eaten enough, they lighted the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. And now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay with a beach onto which they planned to run the ship if possible. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. And meanwhile, loosing the rudder ropes, and they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for shore. But striking a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. Now the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wanting to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it was that they all escaped safely to land. God took care of them, even in those undesirable circumstances. God said, "If you obey, then you're all going to be saved. God protected them from that. Where God or His Holy Spirit, where He leads us, He will provide for us. Is it all going to be easy? Are we going to have exactly what we want? Very likely not. But God will provide where He leads us. We must be willing to follow the Spirit's direction. We must be willing to go, to speak to the stranger or to our friend, to sit still when He asks us to sit still, to be silent and listen. Listen when it is necessary to do so. God will not keep His silence forever. When I jotted that, I had to think of the story of the man, the Christian pastor who was imprisoned. I forget where he was. For 2 years. And he made the comment. He said, in those 2 years, he said, I never sensed God's presence. And I thought, boy, how can a Christian, how could that be for a Christian? And I believe he was a Christian. He was a pastor. But that was his statement, that God, he never sensed God's presence. And yet God kept him alive and safe for those 2 years. And he lived to tell about it. We don't always know God's purpose. We are not guaranteed answers. Last Sunday, just down the road from us, it was an accident. A young man was running away from the cops. And he hit a couple, man and wife, that were on their way to church, just down around the corner from us, and killed both of them. The young man survived. Those are things that we question God. Two people that were doing what they should have been doing, going to church on Sunday, were instantly taken out of this life. I don't know them. They live close to us someplace. I don't know exactly where. Very likely they have family. God took them. We would say, where was God during that time? We don't always know God's purpose. We are not guaranteed answers. But we are promised an eternal home with Him. Is that not provision enough for us? We talk much about eternity, and it's hard for us to grasp eternity. Where will we be? We sometimes use the expression, throughout eternity. And that's not an exact expression. Throughout means that there will be a beginning and an end, and it will not be that way. Where will we be in eternity? God has promised a home for us if we continue to serve Him, love Him, obey Him, do what He asks us to do to the best of our ability. Thank you for your attention. Jay, would you lead that song for us, please?